On Sunday, March 5th at 11 p.m., as we approach the end of African Heritage Month and enter Women's History Month, Sugar in My Bowl honors Renaissance woman Abby Lincoln. Join us as we do our part in an effort to continue this listener-supported experiment. That's Sunday, March 5th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
Sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. Our focus this evening, as we transition from African Heritage Month to Women's History Month, is Abby Lincoln, Aminata Moseka Renaissance woman. We're going to open the program with Avec le Temps from her A Turtle's Dream release that features Pat Metheny on guitar, Charlie Hayden on bass, and Victor Lewis on drums. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. We will need your support, 516-620-3602, for a pledge of $35. You can receive this 2-CD set that remembers Abby Lincoln. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
Avec le temps, bah, tout s'en va. On oublie le visage et l'on oublie la voix. Le cœur quand ça va plus, c'est pas la peine d'aller chercher plus loin. Faut laisser faire et c'est très bien. Avec le temps. L'autre qu'on adorait, qu'on cherchait sous la pluie, l'autre qu'on devinait, oh, de tout dans le corps, entre les mots, entre les lignes sous le phare, dans ce moment marqué qui s'en va faire sa nuit avec le temps. Avec le temps, avec le temps va, tout s'en va. Même les plus chouettes souvenirs, ça t'a une de ses gueules. À la gare, il fâche foule, dans la rayon de la mort. Le samedi soir, quand la tendresse s'en va toute seule. Avec le temps, avec le temps, va tout se battre. L'autre qui l'on connaît, pour ou pour rien. L'autre qui l'on donnait, tout vendait. pour qu'il en vienne du sol pour quelques sous devant qu'on se tenait comme traîner le chien. Avec le temps, bah, tout va bien.
Of a legend, Abby Lincoln. In the long chain of musical creativity that characterizes Black American musics and increasingly American music, jazz has played a pivotal role. Although it is now the stuff of college radio and concerts for the well-heeled middle-class intelligentsia, there was a time when it was a radical and indeed a revolutionary music, carrying within it the seeds of rebellion and protest. Among the artists who personified these attributes were the drummer and composer Max Roach, 1924-2007, and his beautiful, talented wife, jazz singer Abby Lincoln. The power of their performance can be seen in the radicalization of Black revolutionary nationalist Muhammad Ahmed, who, in his work, We Will Return in the Whirlwind, Black Radical Organizations, 1960-1975, explains the political impacts of the work of Roach, Lincoln, and other jazz artists in the late 50s. First was going to see Max Roach and Abby Lincoln present their Freedom Now suite at the National Convention of the NAACP. I had been raised on jazz and had done my homework with Eddie Collier while listening to John Coltrane's Giant Steps. But this was the first time I had heard message music so direct for my generation. The Freedom Now suite immediately raised my political cultural consciousness. Noted musicologist Dr. F. Ricky Vincent has credited Roach and Lincoln as being among the forerunners of the funk movement in jazz and later black popular music, the funk being the realness, earthiness, and Africanity that fueled dozens of groups from James Brown to Parliament Funkadelic and beyond. Although jazz is a relatively small slice of record or CD sales these days, 2% according to the Recording Industry Association of America for 2006, it's more than classical, but less than children's music for the same period. It has had a powerful and outsized impact on music, politics, and culture. Abby Lincoln, with her moving and memorable contralto, certainly played a leading role in that march, and she will be remembered. Lincoln was 80. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Forgive me if I seem to preach, but there is something that I wanna say, a message that I hope will reach people who are throwing life away. I call it my philosophy. That is why I pass it on to you, because it works so well for me and helps me get away from strife. I hope you listen carefully. They say the truth will make you free, and that's the way you wanna be. 'Cause brother, this is your life. Long as you live in, always remember, time is for spending, but there's an ending. While you are sleeping, lifetime is creeping. Wake up and taste it, foolish to waste it. Sample and savor all of its flavor, long as you're living.
When Abby Lincoln gave her last breath on the morning of August 14, 2010, she left a legacy that, though obscured by time and ignorance, marks her as one of the most singular black artists of the 20th century. Though it is important to remember Lincoln as one of the truly original jazz vocalists ever, there are few artists who could claim to have been as obsessed with using her art as singer, songwriter, essayist, painter, and actress, as a vessel to explicate the full humanity of herself and the people that she often claimed were inside of her. Born Anna Marie Wellridge in August of 1930 in Chicago, Lincoln came of age at a time when many aspiring artists from that era were profoundly affected by the music of Billie Holiday. Two decades later, Lincoln would be favorably compared to Holiday, though she would struggle throughout much of her early career to escape the shadows of both Holiday and the formidable mythology that had been erected in her name. After apprenticing in various places, including Honolulu and California, where she had initially moved after graduating high school, and taking the name Gabby Lee, Lincoln began to be managed by lyricist Bob Russell. It was Russell who suggested another name change, Abby Lincoln, and who helped Lincoln sign with the noted jazz label Riverside, where she recorded four albums beginning with Abby's Love Affair, A Story of a Girl in Love.
Love walked right in and drove the shadows away.
That's him. It's magic.
You smile, the song begins. You speak and I hear violins. It's magic.
And Abby is blue. on Lincoln's debut recorded with the Benny Carter Orchestra. Riverstride tried to position Lincoln as a sexy girl next door torch song singer, and it was in that vein that Lincoln appeared in the film The Girl Can't Help It, wearing the same dress that Marilyn Monroe once wore in Gentlemen's Prefer Blondes.
Glory be and hallelujah, spread the gospel, spread the word.
When Lincoln appeared on the cover of Ebony magazine in Monroe's dress, her fate as yet another silent, pretty face seemed assured. But like her contemporary Eartha Kitt, Lincoln had another vision for herself. Living in New York City, Lincoln became professionally acquainted with a group of progressive jazz artists, including drummer Max Roach, who would not only become Lincoln's musical mentor, but her romantic partner. The two married in 1960. The increased influence on Lincoln of musicians like Roach, Sonny Rollins, and songwriter Oscar Brown Jr. can be indexed in the changing style of her albums, culminating in her 1959 classic, Abbey Is Blue, which released the same year of Holiday's death, featuring legendary side musicians like Philly Joe Jones, Sam Jones, Kenny Dorham, and Wynton Kelly. Abbey Is Blue finds Lincoln interpreting Mongo Santa Maria's Afro Blue.
And my slumbering fantasy assumes reality, until it seems it's not a dream, the two are you and me. Shades of delight, cocoa hue, rich as the night, Afro blue.
Kurt Wilde's Lonely House with lyrics by Langston Hughes, Oscar Brown Jr.'s Brother, Where Are You?, and the Duke Ellington classic Come Sunday. Abbey Is Blue not only served as a tribute to some of the important black songwriters of the era, it also signaled a shift in her art, as she more dutifully linked her music to the broader struggles of blacks globally. Lincoln's transformation began to take place a few years earlier when she literally threw away the Marilyn Monroe dress and was fully articulated with two recordings, 1960's We Insist, Freedom Now with Max Roach, and her own Straight Ahead, which would be her last recording with Roach and the last studio recording for more than a decade. Some of the lasting standouts on Straight Ahead were When Melindy Sings, based on the Paul Laurence Dunbar poem.
Towser, stop that barking, hear me? Mansie, make that child keep still. Can't you hear the echoes calling from the valley to the hill? Let me listen, I can hear it through the brush of angels' wings. Soft and sweet, swing low, sweet chariot, when Melindy sings.
Lincoln would later point Maya Angelou to Dunbar's work as inspiration for I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Left Alone, a Billie Holiday song that she never recorded, but on which Holiday's accompanist, Mal Waldron, appears, and Thelonious Monk's Blue Monk.
Going alone, life is your own, but the cost sometimes is dear. Be
Monk was in the studio when Lincoln recorded Blue Monk and famously told her, "Don't be so perfect," which Lincoln understood as a reminder that if your voice cracks, it'll give you texture. Straight Ahead established Lincoln as an important artist in her own right. The New York Times offered a rare three-column review, but also instigated charges by critic Ira Gittler that Lincoln was a professional Negro, using the Civil Rights Movement to further her career. The reality couldn't be further from the truth, as Lincoln sacrificed what was thought to be the prime years of her career, essentially banished from the mainstream because of her willful linking of her art with her radical political beliefs. Lincoln survived the 1960s touring in Europe and eventually catching the eye of independent filmmaker Michael Romer, who cast Lincoln opposite Ivan Dixon in the now classic Nothing But a Man in 1963.
Here's the glass, honey. That's what it's for.
That so?
Yes. So? What's wrong?
Smell like something crawled up in there and died.
Oh, really? I thought it was pretty good.
Come here, babe. Everything you cook is good.
Doc?
Hmm?
You know those women you used to know?
What about them?
Am I as good as they?
Good coffee.
You didn't answer my question.
Baby, you're the best thing that ever happened to me.
You still didn't answer my question.
Well, if you don't know, I can't tell you.
Lincoln later appeared opposite Sidney Poitier in For the Love of Ivy.
Would you like me to change the music?
No, it's fine. It was a very nice dinner.
Thank you. It's hard when you know how.
You learned from your mama.
My grandmother. She brought me up.
I hear that you, I hear you want to split from here. Why? I mean, it looks like a pretty good setup.
Too good. I don't want to die here.
You gotta die someplace.
Well, isn't it better if you don't go ignorant and alone?
Much better. Thank you.
I want to go to school, maybe learn to be a secretary. I'd like to meet people.
Where are you from?
Florida. You from the West Indies, aren't you?
Yes. You can still hear it, eh?
A little.
Though Lincoln was poised to pursue a full-fledged acting career against Roach's wishes, who wanted a domesticated wife, she found the Hollywood scene difficult to negotiate. In a 1968 Washington Post interview, Lincoln expressed concerns about, quote, doing an imitation of a white woman either as a woman or really as an actress. Lincoln was more direct 5 years later in a Pittsburgh Courier interview when she said that, quote, the scripts that were sent to me were not representative of the people I know and the women I bring to the stage. Lincoln goes on to say in the interview that, quote, the people who have cared for me have always been the ones who were called niggers. The people who are called niggers are the wellspring where I go. When Lincoln sat down once again with the Pittsburgh Courier in 1973, she was in another moment of radical transformation. Her marriage to Roach ended 3 years earlier, and she was living in Los Angeles with her mother. Lincoln recalled old friend Red Fox, then popularly known as television's Fred Sanford, giving her money from time to time when she needed it. She also took on two additional names. The names Amanata Moseka was given to her by Guinean President Sekou Touré and the Minister of Information Zaire, respectively, during a tour of Africa with Miriam Makeba. While traveling in Japan in 1973, she also made her first studio recording in more than a decade, People and Me, the first in which she wrote the lyrics to all of the songs. Recorded with a few of Miles Davis's sidemen and not released in the United States until 1979, the recording laid the foundation for what would be Lincoln's renaissance in the 1980s. By the early 1980s, Lincoln was performing regularly around New York City, primarily with a cadre of young artists, including saxophonist Steve Coleman, pianist James Wideman, both of who appear on 1984's Talking to the Sun.
I'm a world away, it seems, from the one who haunts my dreams, like the distance that the earth is to the sun. And he holds me in his love, like the light that shines above. And he's everywhere and everywhere. everything to me. He makes the day begin just like the rising sun. An elemental fellow who gets the job done. He's super and he's super. Oh, and what I wouldn't do for just a smile from the early rising sun.
We are the kids! Come on! Come on!
Boys!
Please, we need you!
Please, be quiet!
Sorry, Mrs. Gilliam. We just wanted to know if Bleak could come out.
I understand that. But this noise has got to stop.
Oh, man.
Bleak! Didn't I tell you to tell your little friends not to come around here?
Jim, leave the boy alone.
Can I go outside now?
When you finish your lesson.
What about then?
We'll see.
Let the boy be a boy. Have some fun.
He could be a bum for all you care. Running the streets with those wild kids.
Almost within walking distance of Forbes Field. He is just 21 years old.
That child's going to drive me up the wall. Go tell him to go home.
Mommy, y'all let me do nothing.
You hear what I said? Go tell him to go home.
When Lincoln appears as the mother of Bleak Gilliam in the Spike Lee film Mo' Better Blues in 1990, she is on the cusp of what would be her most sustained period of recording. Signing with Verve in 1989, Lincoln would record 11 albums over the final 20 years of her life, beginning with The World is Falling Down in 1990. Writing about Lincoln in 1996, New York Times jazz critic Peter Waltrius begins his piece with the simple observation that sometime in the last 20 years, Abby Lincoln came into greatness as a jazz singer. 20 years after she walked away from her music, Lincoln was now a woman at her peak, and willing and able to take the kind of aesthetic risk that would mark her as a maverick in her later years. One such moment is her brilliant collaboration with Mavis Staples and the Staples Singers on the track Story of My Father.
Do we kill ourselves on purpose? Is destruction all our own? Are we dying for a reason? Is our leaving on our own? All the people suicidal. Did we come this far to die of ourselves? Are we to perish for this useless, worthless life? My father had a kingdom. My father bore a crown. They say he was an awful.
When another New York Times writer profiles Lincoln upon the release of her last recording, Abby Sings Abby, in 2007, most of the story is about her songwriting and how far Lincoln had to travel to be able to write the songs that allowed her the opportunity to tell her own stories. That red Marilyn Monroe dress was long gone, a forgotten trinket of the black woman that Lincoln was and the world that she helped to change 50 years earlier. Abby Sings Abby has the feeling of an artist saying goodbye, not unlike listening to Billie Holiday's Lady in Satin, which poet Fred Moten describes as, quote, the record of a wonderfully articulate body in pain. But unlike Holiday, one doesn't hear pain or trauma in Lincoln's voice, but simply triumph.
That was Mark Anthony Neal, professor of Black Popular Culture in the Department of African and African American Studies at Duke University.
The music is the magic of a secret world, a secret world, a secret world. The music is the magic of a secret world. It's a world that is always within. The music is the magic and the hiding place. The music is the magic and the hiding place. It's
the spirit is home. The music is the magic of a secret world. Secret world, a secret world. The music is the magic of a secret world. It's a world that is always within.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and we're remembering Abby Lincoln this evening on Sugar in My Bowl. We just heard from Mark Anthony Neal, writer and professor, and before that, Mumia Abu-Jamal, journalist and political prisoner, and they shared their remembrances of Abby Lincoln for a pledge of $35. As a thank you gift, we will send you a 2-CD set of remembrances of Abby Lincoln. This is a special that I put together in 2010. Some of the participants are not with us right now, and none of this is available in the Pacifica archives. Some of the other voices that are included in this 2-CD set are Sonia Sanchez, who is reading a piece written by Abby Lincoln that was part of Tony Cade Bambara's anthology, The Black Woman, from 1970. Abby Lincoln's piece is titled, To Whom Will She Cry Rape? So we have Sonia Sanchez reading that. We also have poet Latasha N. Nevada Diggs reading Abby Lincoln's poetry. The poetry was featured in Confirmation, an anthology of African American women, which was edited by Amina and Amiri Baraka. We also have remembrances from Jane Cortez, Farrah Jasmine Griffin, Carl Hancock Rux, filmmaker Ifa Baeza, who was the director of You Gotta Pay the Band. It's a rare film that it was a very good film on Abby Lincoln. Included in Ifa Baeza's remembrance, I used an excerpt of Abby Lincoln talking to blues singer Ruth Brown. We also hear from Maggie Brown, Oscar Brown Jr.'s daughter, bassist Christian McBride, also the late bassist Charlie Hayden. And we added an interview with Mark Carey. So by calling 516-620-3602, you can show your support for a pledge of $35. We'll send you this 2-CD set of this Abby Lincoln special. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Coming up next, we'll hear from Latasha N. Nevada Diggs and Farrah Jasmine Griffin. Stay tuned. Sugar in My Bowl continues. This is Joyce Jones, and I'm here with
Latasha N. Nevada Diggs.
And Latasha N. Nevada Diggs has been curating some shows titled Four Women. Tell me about those shows, Latasha.
Well, Four Women is a show that pays honor to four vocalists, writers, composers, artists in their own right: Abby Lincoln, Miriam Makeba, Eartha Kitt, and Odetta. And the first event was actually a tribute to Miriam Makeba some weeks following her passing. And it became fitting to later put together an event for the other women, as it seemed that once Miriam Makeba decided to leave the building, Eartha followed, Odetta followed, and many people have asked why Abby Lincoln was included to the tribute, and my feelings had to do with the fact that rarely do we acknowledge or honor many of these women, many of these artists, while they're living. So given that I knew that she was in poor health, that she was still here, she was still very much Abby, but her health wasn't very good, it made sense to do that and to pay honor to all four of them and to title it For Women, which would basically say that I was giving another head nod to Nina Simone with her song For Women. Allowing myself to be sad, but also happy that she has traveled on, that she left us with a lot of things to think about, and to also know that the things that she inspired within myself and within so many other younger women of my generation, who are my peers, who I am just as influenced by, the work that we have to do, that we have to continue as artists.
So what has Abby Lincoln meant to you?
She's meant spunk. She's meant a lot of inflammatory words that I can't say right now because this is going to be on radio. But she could say it and not care because it was her work that mattered. And if you didn't like it, you go on. And the things that she lived by, whether I might have agreed with them or not, same philosophy. If you don't like them, you could go on. You know, this is how I feel. You may think, you know, that I'm something. But in actuality, I'm a whole lot of everything else. And I like that about her. I think that's something I personally aspire to. As an artist, as somebody who chooses to do things that may not necessarily be conventional, that may not necessarily be safe, that may not necessarily be something that will make it to the radio or make it to the book, that as long as I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, I'm going to be okay. And I think, for me, that's what Abby voiced in her interviews and in her work.
Well, since you actually eventually wound up spending time with Abby Lincoln,
mm-hmm.
had your appreciation grown as a result of that?
I think it did. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I only saw her a couple of times because I don't know her personally, and I didn't feel terribly comfortable about, you know, visiting her and, you know, knowing family members there. So I try to respect that and just pop my head in once in a blue moon. And I think even those few occasions, I got a bit of Abby, you know, where it was kind of like, okay, this is not an older woman who happens to be sick. This is actually a woman with just as much spunk mm-hmm. that you hear in those songs, just as much attitude, just as much jokes, too. Like, I was thinking today how she was, like, teasing a nurse. And all of a sudden, she was teasing a nurse, and she came out of nowhere and said, bubble butt.
No.
And I said, oh, wow. Because a part of that was, for me, like, almost like an old Southern woman teasing, you know, a younger woman. You know, like, and you've seen the generations tease each other.
Sure.
You know, so it was kind of like a little bit of my mama teasing me about my butt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just that moment of just kind of like something really, really familiar
right. Out
of somebody that I hold in a very high place.
Right.
And I was just like, whoa.
Well, thank you, Natasha. Thank you for sharing your feelings.
Thank you.
Experience.
Well, I found me a silent playmate when I was just a knee-high, who always came round when I needed it, especially when I cried. I found me a silent playmate who grew up with me as I
Natasha and Nevada Diggs. Abby Lincoln, Aminata Moseka, I am the weaver. I am the weaver, I knit and sew and twine and braid and plait and twist and turn and zigzag and compose and create and make things be. See, making it is the magic word for me. I am the weaver. And knead and press and paste and mass and make dough and bread. I am a kneader of a mud wall construction and bring into being, into form by shaping and putting parts and ingredients together and build, construct, fabricate, fashion, devise, and formulate ways of doing things and cause and bring about and produce and prepare for use. I am the weaver and make the beds in which people lie. I establish and make a rule that only members could attend to get and acquire and make money and do and perform and make a quick movement. I am the weaver and succeed in becoming the lover of tricks and take with a card and name the trump and shuffle the cards in a game to get a score. I am the weaver. To cause something to be, I start to do something, to go, to proceed, to tend, extend, to point, to behave in a particular manner, to make bold, make steady, make ready, and make fast. I increase in depth and volume and rise and accumulate as does the tide, the sea, water in a ship. I am widely and variously used in idiomatic phrases, many of which use the key word make, faces, make fun, make eyes, make good, and make sure. I am the weaver, the act and process of making, the way in which something appears, is made, style, build, construction, type, sort, brand, the disposition, character, and nature, the weaver, the maker. Abby Lincoln, Aminata Moseka, I am the weaver.
Hi, this is Joyce Jones. I'm here with
Farrah Jasmine Griffin.
Yes, and Farrah Jasmine Griffin is a professor at Columbia University.
I'm professor of English and Comparative Literature and African American Studies, and I also teach in jazz studies.
And I'm with you to discuss Abby Lincoln, and apparently you've spent time with Ms. Lincoln.
I haven't spent a lot of time with her personally. I spent, feels like a lifetime, with her work as an actress and writer and singer and composer. So I feel like I've spent a great deal of time with the work that she's left us.
Well, you've written about her in your book, In Search of Billie Holiday, because Abby Lincoln was inspired by Billie Holiday.
Right.
Apparently there are several pages in this book about Abby Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
How did you obtain the information?
Well, through a series of things. I was a member of a jazz study group here at Columbia, and she was gracious enough to come meet with us and talk with us and answer questions and share her stories. And then I had spent a lot of time reading as much as I could, reading both things that she'd written and things that were written about her. And I decided to close the book on Billie Holiday with Abby as one manifestation of Billie Holiday's legacy, and to talk not so much about Abby Lincoln, the person, but the persona that she put forth in her performances and in her kind of public appearances.
Well, why don't you talk a little bit about what you think Abby's legacy means right now, particularly in this moment where you do have, you know, very highly visible and very highly sexualized, you know, female stars, but to me it seems very few people with the type of range and type of ability that Abby had.
One of the things I think that Abby, she has so much to teach us, but one of the things is just this kind of intense personal growth as a human being and as an artist, and a kind of self-reflection and growth that allowed her to see what she saw as a kind of emptiness about the way that she was being presented by managers and producers who simply wanted to present her as the kind of sex symbol. And that was a big risk. I mean, she could have made a lot of money that way. She could have become famous. She could have become a grand celebrity. But I think she chose on the side of her truth. And thank God, because what she found on that side was just this extraordinary treasure trove of, I think of them almost as messages from the universe that she became the perfect conduit for. And so I would encourage any contemporary young women artists to really study Abby's life and her music.
Well, thank you very much, Farrah Jasmine Griffin. Thank you very much for spending time with Sugar My Ball.
Thank you.
I took a trip to Paris. I saw the Eiffel Tower. I flew to Honolulu. It's the South Pacific Tower. All across the Bay of, I went to Old Malaya. What a perfect locale. Traveled here and yonder, and I never found a home. I guess it must be written all my life to roam. Oh!
listening to Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. My name's Joyce Jones, and we're listening to a special honoring Abby Lincoln, Amanata Moseka, vocalist, composer, writer, painter, a Renaissance woman. We just heard from Farrah Jasmine Griffin, and before that, Latasha N. Nevada Diggs. What we're listening to in the background is Africa from People in Me. Originally recorded in 1973, it was released in 1993. We have Abby Lincoln on vocals, and she wrote the words to this John Coltrane melody. Dave Liebman is on soprano saxophone, flute on others. Kuni Mitsu Inaba on bass, Al Foster on drums, James Ntume on congas, and Hirumasa Suzuki on piano. For a pledge of $35, you can get this special as a thank you for your generous support by calling 516-620-3602. You could get this 2-CD set. And stay tuned for our associate producer, Hank Williams, and our On the Bandstand segment right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for March 5th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can see them live. And this week's show features a documentary special from Joyce Jones on the late Abby Lincoln. You can get a copy of the 2-CD set for a $35 pledge to WBAI, and that includes a year's station membership, by calling 516-620-3602 while we're on the air. That's 516-620-3602, or pledge online at give2, that's the number 2, WBAI.org. You can pledge as little as $5 or consider a monthly donation, which gets you station membership as a WBAI buddy with additional benefits. We also have autographed copies of John Else's True South book on filmmaker Henry Hampton's struggle to get the monumental Eyes on the Prize series on TV, and those are also available as a thank you gift at the $35 pledge level at 516-620-3602 or give to WBAI.org. I'll repeat all that at the end of the segment after our listenings. We start this week with drummer and percussionist Will Calhoun, who's at Carnegie Hall with Living Color on March 6th performing the music of Aretha Franklin. Saxophonist Gary Bartz is at the Blue Note on the 6th and 20th with pianist McCoy Tyner. He'll also be at Smoke from the 17th through 19th for a record release party with Heads of State. Harpist Brandy Younger is at the Schomburg Center on the 6th for the annual Women in Jazz Festival, and drummer Terry Lynn Carrington is at the Schomburg on the 13th for the same series. Vibraphonist Gary Burton is at Birdland from the 7th through the 11th. Guitarist Julian Lage is at Rockwood Music Hall on the 9th and 10th. Drummer Roy Haynes is at the Blue Note for his annual birthday celebration from the 9th through 12th with special guests. Blues vocalist Alexis P. Suter is at the Turning Point in Piermont on the 11th. Looking a little further ahead, saxophonist Kenny Garrett is at the Blue Note from the 13th through the 16th. Bassist Christian McBride is at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem on the 14th for part 3 of the Session Stories, a talk on his recording and performing career. Bassist Mimi Jones leads a trio at Ink Bar and Kitchen in New Brunswick, New Jersey on the 15th. Trumpeter Marcus Printup is at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Rose Theater on the 17th and 18th with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra, and they'll be playing music from the 1960s. Pianist Michelle Rosewoman leads New Yoruba at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club from the 17th through the 19th. Drummer J.T. Lewis and keyboardist David Vireas are at the Jazz Gallery on the 18th with the Phantom Station Ensemble. Finally, saxophonist Oliver Lake, bassist Reggie Workman, drummer Andrew Surreal, and pianist Vijay Iyer are at the Village Vanguard as Trio 3 Plus 1 from the 21st through the 26th. That's all this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website, and Sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. If you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too. We'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. And if you like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can. Consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge at 516-620-3602 or online at give2wbai.org, or you can just see the Support WBAI link on our own website. You can pledge as little as $5, and listeners pledging at the $35 level can choose to receive a copy of either the 2-CD Abby Lincoln documentary special or an autographed copy of John Else's True South book as a thank you gift. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our biweekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on air on Sunday, March 19th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on The Bandstand.
Hello, this is Hugh Masekela in New York. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. Don't lose your mind. Don't move that dial. Don't groove to anything else.
Time forever true. loves its own, and me and you disappear just like the sun when the day is done. World is falling down, hold my hand. It's a lonely sound, hold my hand. We'll follow the breeze and go like the wind and look for a place where the windows bend. World is falling.
Hold my hand. We'll follow the sun. falling down, hold my hand. Hold my hand, hold my hand, hold my hand.
Whenever I come to WBAI, I think about Pepsi Charles. I don't know if you knew Pepsi Charles, but Pepsi and I used to go out with Abby Lincoln for lunch a lot, all through the 90s. And in 2000, when I was artist in resident at NYU's Institute of African American Affairs, Abby came for one session and participated by showing her film. I think it was You Have to Pay the Band, and we had a great conversation. So when someone steps out and steps up to the plate in a serious way to deal with the world, you take note of that. So when Abby stepped out in the 1950s recording of songs written by Oscar Brown Jr. and supported by an array of excellent musicians, including Sonny Rollins, Kenny Durham, Paul Chambers, Wynton Kelly, and Max Roach, and then continued stepping out in the 60s recording We Insist Freedom Now Suite, followed by the album Straight Ahead, where she added lyrics to the works that had already existed, like Thelonious Monk's Blue Monk, and where she was singing, collaborating, interconnecting, and setting the pitch and mood for musicians like Coleman Hawkins. She sounded so confident and good singing as Coleman Hawkins or as Sonny Rollins played. And that could not have been easy. In fact, I know it wasn't easy. Also, Abby's vocal collaborations with Max's free drum rhythms when she screaming on the We Insist recording. That was an area of black vocalizing which was different and significant. We Insist was timely. It was combined with the right music at the right time. It was an immediate creative response to the movement. Not that the music by itself wasn't in the struggle, but she amplified it. Being in the struggle, she emphasized it. Abby was an artist producing music and actively participating in protest demonstrations at a time when people were being beaten and killed for trying to vote in the South, and being killed for being Patrice Lumumba in the Congo. She and people like Paul Robeson and Odetta found ways of using songs to make statements and send messages to the audiences that they were dealing with. In other words, they were often thinking like people who were organizers. When Abby had something she wanted to say, she found the material or she wrote it. That's when you saw the activists within her affecting her decisions, like the night she performed in the Hurricane Katrina event on television and sang from an old song the words, "For all we know, we may never meet again."
Oh. This may only be a dream. We come and go like the ripples on a stream. So love me, love me tonight. Tomorrow was made for some. Let me have it, Mark. Tomorrow may never come. For we know.
She was looking beneath the surface, which is sometimes very painful, but Abby did that. Abby was aware of history, and her paying homage to Billie Holiday was an example of her being aware of history. So by singing and singling out certain Billie Holiday songs, she was really speaking to the history of African-American women in music. Abby always projected herself as a woman of strength and courage, a person who understood the structural complexities of music. She was also confident in having a positive look as a black woman. In addition, her hobby was painting, which means she was paying attention to the visuals in life. So when someone steps out and steps up to the plate in a serious way to deal with the world, you take note of that. Because it's not easy to step out, to open yourself up, take chances, experiment, make your own opportunity, and try to be who you want to be in this world. And to me, Abby did that. And in doing so, she revealed her attitude, her obsessions, her conflicts, her concepts, and ways of being. She is an example of a woman artist who understood the space she lived in and understood a term like freedom. A person who had the ability, the determination, and capacity to amplify and intensify what she heard inside of herself. And it is that up-to-the-moment freedom and going beyond the moment that I hear in her voice. And it's the experience, wisdom, concentration, and opening up of possibilities that I notice in her construction of melodies. And in her choice of words as she sang When I'm Called Home, Bird Alone, Devil Got Your Tongue, Throw It Away, You Got to Pay the Band, People in Me, The World is Falling Down, and The Music is Magic, just to name a few of her compositions. She was brilliant. She was a poet, a storyteller, a weaver. I like what she did with words and music. She had artistic imagination and great emotional depth, and she could communicate and make an audience feel, really feel. And her work always showed an appreciation of black culture and a respect for the planet Earth. So I say a bonga to Abby for her incredible achievements and for her great contribution to the world of music. I am Jane Cortez, friend of Abby Lincoln.
Straight ahead, the road keeps winding, narrow, wet, and dimly lit. Vainly looking for a crossroad where a weary lost and needing some direction, dodging ruts along the way, bumpy road, confuse a body, lead a trust. Trusting soul astray. For some, this road is smooth and easy, traveling high without a care. But if you got to use the back road, straight ahead can lead nowhere. Winding, narrow, wet, and dimly lit. Vainly looking
for a crossroad where a weary soul can sit lost and needing some direction, dodging ruts along the way. Bumpy road, confuse a body, lead a trusting soul astray. For some, this road is smooth and easy, traveling high without a care. But if you got to use the back roads, straight ahead can lead nowhere. On this road, you got a problem getting where you want to go. Speed limits almost down to nothing, straight ahead, but awful slow.
We just heard from Jane Cortez on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. This is Sugar in My Bowl, and we're in the midst of an Abby Lincoln special. Before Jane Cortez, we heard The World is Falling Down, the title cut from Abby Lincoln's 1990 Verve release. That's Abby Lincoln on vocals, Clark Terry on trumpet, Jackie McLean on alto saxophone, Elaine Jean-Marie on piano, Charlie Hayden on bass, Billy Higgins on drums, and the arrangements were written by Ron Carter. What we're listening to right now is Straight Ahead. Jane Cortez had mentioned that this was her favorite song by Abby Lincoln. This is from the 1965 Verve release, the title track, Straight Ahead. Abby Lincoln on vocals, Booker Little on trumpet, Julian Priester on trombone, Eric Dolphy on reeds, Coleman Hawkins on tenor saxophone, Walter Benton on tenor saxophone as well, Mal Waldron on piano, Art Davis on bass, and Max Roach on drums. We'll be hearing from another ancestor, Charlie Hayden, right after this. If you call 516-620-3602, you can get this 2-CD set for a pledge of $35. We will thank you by giving you this 2-CD set. There are also a few copies of True South by John Else, which was offered during our last program. There are still a few autographed copies for the same pledge amount of $35. We will thank you with an autographed copy of True South. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
Can lead nowhere. On this road, you got a problem getting where you want to go. Speed limits almost down to nothing, straight ahead, but awful slow.
This is Joyce Jones, and I'm here with Charlie Hayden. Charlie Hayden, thank you for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
And my pleasure, Joyce.
I called you because I wanted to hear your thoughts about the transitioning of Abby Lincoln. First off, how did you meet? How did you wind up meeting Abby Lincoln? Was it when you were with Ornette Coleman?
Yeah, I was playing with Ornette. Matter of fact, we had just come from the West Coast to the East Coast to open at the Five Spot in New York in 1959. And the next summer, they had the Newport Jazz Festival, of course, but this time it was a little different. There was a lot of protests going on about the tickets being high or people not being able to get in. And I don't know exactly what was all included in the grumblings of people not being happy, but I know that there was a counter festival that was planned by Max Roach and Charlie Mingus, and it was at this place called Cliffwalk Manor in Newport, and it was a beautiful big mansion on the top of a hillside overlooking the ocean, and there were a lot of people playing besides Max Roach's group and Charlie Mingus's group, and Abby was with Max, and there was Alan Eager, and there was Kenny Durham, there was a lot of people, and Ornette and Don Cherry and I and Ed Blackwell, and she was such a very nice person, and it was a beautiful festival.
So when did you start playing with Abby Lincoln?
Well, it was the first time I played music with her was it was with Jackie McLean, and she did one of my songs that I wrote for my wife Ruth called First Song, and she wrote lyrics to the song and sang it because she really liked the song. Song, and of course it was written for my wife, but it was also written for the earth and the universe, and it's like the first song of the world, you know. So she wrote these beautiful lyrics to it, which really portrayed that, and she made several albums after that. I mean, I was never on a recording with her other than her own, and there were several I made with her, one with Pat Metheny, another one with Stan Getz and and Hank Jones, called
"Yes.
You Gotta Pay the Band." One, I think that's the title.
Indeed, I love that one. That is one of my favorites, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I lucked out and got her to autograph the booklet. So.
Oh, that's good.
I'm very happy with that. I love that one.
You made me wacky. You made me nervous. You made me swallow and breathe. Swallow and breathe. Oh, you made me shaky. You made me funny. You made me frightened and alarmed. Frightened and alarmed. You made me flaky. You made me shaky. You made me freaky. You made me sneaky. You made me funny. Oh, you made me funny.
Yeah, I got to go back and play those records again. I haven't played them in a long time.
When you started the Liberation Music Orchestra, could you take anything from the Freedom Now, We Insist recording? Or?
Well, you know, I always admired that record. Mine came out of another direction. Theirs was about, of course, oppression and racism.
Mm-hmm, right.
That's what that was about.
Right.
And mine was about Nixon in Vietnam, and that was 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And I formed the orchestra, and we wrote songs, and I had some songs from the Spanish Civil War in 1937, and we did the first record. And then we did three more records after that under Reagan and Bush's father, and then Bush. The
right.
Last one's called Not in Our Name. Yeah, that was a period of time when most jazz musicians, especially African American jazz musicians, well, jazz musicians in general, because it's a minority art form, and it's still a minority art form. Mm-hmm. And the musicians weren't given much respect when they went to play at different places and didn't stay in great hotels and et cetera like that. And so a lot of people were conscious that we should be treated better, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So out of all that came some beautiful music.
How old were you? Because you were probably pretty much a baby when you were doing that. How old were you?
Well, when I came out to play with her, when I met Ornette, I was 19.
Oh, okay.
18.
Mm-hmm.
When I met him in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we came to New York, I was, you know, my early, like 20, 21, trying to make music.
Oh, okay. Now, you recorded on the Verve label, You Gotta Pay the Band, as you mentioned, and mm-hmm. A Turtle's Dream.
Oh, yeah. Who was on that?
That was Pat Metheny, Christian McBride, Victor Lewis, Rodney Kendrick. Roy Hargrove was on some of the cuts.
Mm-hmm. So Christian played bass on some of it, too?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yes. Okay.
And Lucky Peterson. I also love Pat Metheny. I love listening to him, and I love listening to you all together.
Mm.
So that was wonderful.
Avec le temps, avec le temps, bah, tout se va. On oublie le visage et l'on oublie la voix. Le cœur quand ça va plus, c'est pas la peine d'aller chercher plus loin. Faut laisser faire et c'est très bien. Avec le temps. Avec le temps va tout se va. L'autre qu'on adorait, qu'on cherchait sous la pluie, l'autre qu'on devinait, oh, de tout dans le cas, entre les mots, entre les lignes sous le phare, dans ce moment maquillé qui s'en va faire sa nuit. Avec le temps, tu s'évanouis.
So what was it like recording with Abby Lincoln in the, I guess, the later years then? Since you had known, you know, all those years had passed
mm-hmm.
that you had known each other.
It was great. She was a great person. I really liked her politics, and I loved the way she was a very deep human being that cared about the planet, and she wrote these beautiful songs and also wrote beautiful lyrics. And you know, it's the same story about you wish that somebody could be more exposed to a wider audience so they could really be more appreciated and touch more people
right.
in a positive way.
Recently I thought of her as you know, in the Matrix there's the Oracle. That's how I think of Abby Lincoln, as the Oracle.
Because
mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. of the words that she wrote, the lyrics were just so poignant and right on, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the lyrics to the first song are really beautiful. I think it starts out when the world was young.
Yes.
Was the first song that was sung. And she was a great poet, man.
Well, thank you very much, Charlie Hayden. Thank you for spending this time with us. Is there anything else you want to share with the listeners about Abby Lincoln?
Well, I just wish that she was here. And I wish, you know, because I'm just in the midst of doing a recording with six singers. It's going to be called Sophisticated Ladies, and it's the 25th anniversary of my Quartet West, which Abby loved. She loved Quartet West because it was about film noir and different things like L.A. and Raymond Chandler and Humphrey Bogart. And Dinah Crowell and Nora Jones and Melody Gardot and Cassandra Wilson and Renee Fleming and my wife Ruth sing on it with strings, and it's really beautiful. And I, the whole time that we were recording, I was thinking about Abby. And also, we do one of Hank Jones's songs called Angel Face.
The stars of wonder shine in your eyes. In contemplation, they tell me you're wise. A wise and angel face. And in your sweet embrace, the power, the power, the power.
You know, I start thinking about Hank, and I think about Abby, and I start thinking about Abby, and I think about Hank.
Right.
The record session that we did together really was a very meaningful time for me with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and subsequently, Hank and I went on to record Steal Away and another album of spirituals right before he died called Come Sunday.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you very much, Charlie Hayden.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. soulful sound, deep as the sea, like you and me, and it's always a song, and the change.
This is Carl Hancock Rux reading a poem for Abby Lincoln. Somewhere in the deepest, darkest regions, there is a tribe of women who speak a language no man understands. I listen to their walking, the movement, hunched over always, backward nodded, that body, another time, bent strange, exaggerating everything. The moon made red, sweet the mercurial glow of acid spit. From the root they pull up weeds, blow the wet smell of lilacs onto bruised orchids, grow crops in balding fields, keep quiet until cancers heal, always stealing time from a peaceful place, while repeating wavering footsteps and swatting things away from a wandering eye, a breast, a gash, a tone, a tongue of shapeless light, the tribal pose of rebuke in cool half-cocked smiles and smoke, outliving language altogether. Without dispute, these are the tallest trees, the envy of years, women everywhere, who speak a language they can only dance 12 times before the earth is fully settled.
They say we live alone, we die alone, that everyone here was born alone. But there was a woman who carried the child and carried them all the way home.
I hope for serenity and understanding, and that my life will be useful.
I'm going to read a piece by Abby Lincoln called To Whom Will She Cry Rape? And this piece was published in Negro Digest in September 1966. But I heard Abby Lincoln do part of this at a place called the Black Arts Repertory Theater the same year, and it was called Who Will Revere the Black Woman. Mark Twain said, in effect, that when a country enslaves a people, the first necessary job is to make the world feel that the people to be enslaved are subhuman.
The next job is to make his fellow countrymen believe that man is inferior, and then the unkindest cut of all is to make that man believe himself inferior. A good job has been done on the black people in this country as far as convincing them of their inferiority is concerned. The general white community has told us in a million different ways and in no uncertain terms that God and nature made a mistake when it came to the fashioning of us and ours. The whole society, having been thoroughly convinced of the stain, threatening, and evil nature of anything unfortunate enough to be or to be referred to as black, as an intended matter of courtesy refers to those of African extraction as colored or Negro. The fact that Negro or Negro is the Spanish word for black is hardly understood. It would seem, or it would seem, that the word black may be intimated or suggested, but never simply stated in good English. Too many Negroes, if described or referred to as black, take it as an affront. And I was once told by a Canadian Irishman that I had insulted him by referring to my person as a black woman. He insisted that in actuality I was brown, not black, and I felt obliged to tell him that he described himself as white and that he wasn't white either. The fact that white people readily and proudly call themselves white, glorify all that is white, and whitewash all that is glorified, becomes unnatural and bigoted in its intent only when these same whites deny persons of African heritage who are black the natural and inalienable right to readily and proudly call themselves black, glorify all that is black, and blackwash all that is glorified. Yet one is forced to conclude that this is not the case at all, that an astonishing proportion of the white population finds it discomforting that blacks should dare to feel so much glory in being beautifully black. In the face of this kind of reasoning, the only conclusion one can logically come to is that there is something wrong with this society and its leadership. The man's opinion of God is sorry, to put it nicely, and his opinion of himself is simply vague and hazy. Consider, swearing his love and devotion to the Omnipotent One on the one hand, yet defying and cursing him with rank impudence on the other, using the crutch of his inherently base and callow nature on the one hand, and claiming his godhood on the other, worshipping a Jew as the son of God on the one hand, yes, persecuting all other Jews as enemies of God on the other, historically placing the same Jew on the African continent on the one hand, and describing him as a European in physical appearance on the other. Still, one would suppose that it's tactically understood by all that God couldn't be anything other than white, no matter where he was born, advocating that the black man is made of inferior stuff on the one hand, yet defying him not to prove his superiority on the other, naming hurricanes for women on the one hand, yet H is for the heart as pure as gold on the other, giving her pet names such as whore, slut, bitch, etc. on the one hand, yet put them all together and they spell mother, the word that means the world to me on the other. No wonder the slogan white is right could take a whole nation by storm. One could never accuse this society of being rational. Still, instead of this irrational society warping my delicate little psyche, it only drove me ultimately to the conclusion that any black human being able to survive the horrendous and evil circumstances in which one inevitably finds oneself trapped must be some kind of a giant with great and peculiar abilities, with an armor as resistant as steel, yet made of purest gold. My mother is one of the most courageous people I have ever known, with an uncanny will to survive. When she was a young woman, the white folks were much further in the lead than they are now, and their racist rules gave her every disadvantage. Yet, she proved herself a queen among women, any women, and as a result, will always be one of the great legends for me. But strange as it is, I've heard it echoed by too many black, full-grown males that black womanhood is the downfall of the black man, in that she, the black woman, is evil, hard to get along with, domineering, suspicious, and narrow-minded, in short, a black, ugly, evil, you know what. As time progresses, I've learned that this description of my mothers, sisters, and partners in crime is used as the basis and excuse for the further shoving by the black man of his own head into the sand of oblivion. Hence, the black mother, housewife, and all-round girl Thursday is called upon to suffer both physically and emotionally every humiliation a woman can suffer and still function. Her head is more regularly beaten than any other woman's, and by her own man. She's the scapegoat for Mr. Charlie. She is forced to stark realism and chided if caught dreaming. Her aspirations for her and hers are, for sanity's sake, stunted. Her physical image has been criminally maligned, assaulted, and negated. She's the first to be called ugly and never yet beautiful, and as a consequence is forced to see her man, an exact copy of her emotionally and physically, brainwashed and wallowing in self-loathing, pick for his own the physical antithesis of her, paren, the white woman, and incubator of his heretofore arch enemy, the white man, in of parenthesis. Then, to add guilt to insult and injury, she, the black woman, stands accused as the emasculator of the only thing she has ever cared for, her black man. She is the scapegoat for what white America has made of the Negro personality. Raped and denied the right to cry out in her pain, she has been named the culprit and called loose, hot-blooded, wanton, sultry, and immoral. She has been used as the white man's sexual outhouse and shamefully encouraged by her own ego-less man to persist in this function. Wanting to be carried away by her prince charming, she must in all honesty admit that he has been robbed of his crown by the very assaulter and assassin who has raped her. Still, she looks upon her man as God's gift to black womanhood and is further diminished and humiliated and outraged when the feeling is not mutual. When a white man likes colored girls, his woman, the white woman, is the last one he wants to know about it. Yet, seemingly, when a Negro likes white girls, his woman, the black woman, is the first he wants to know about it. White female rejects and social misfits are flagrantly flaunted in our faces as the ultimate in feminine pulchritude. Our women are encouraged by our own men to strive to look and act as much like the white female image as possible, and only those who approach that goal in physical appearance and social behavior are acceptable. At best, we are made to feel that we are poor imitations and excuses for white women. Evil, evil, you say. The black woman is hurt, confused, frustrated, angry, resentful, frightened, and evil. Who in this hell dares suggest that she should be otherwise? These attitudes only point up her perception of the situation and her healthy rejection of saying, maybe if our women get evil enough and angry enough, they'll be moved to some action that will bring our men to their senses. There is one unalterable fact that too many of our men cannot seem to face, and that is we, black, evil, ugly women, are a perfect and accurate reflection of you, black, evil, ugly men. Play hide and seek as long as you can and will, but your every rejection and abandonment of us is only a sorry testament of how thoroughly and carefully you have been blinded and brainwashed. And let it further be understood that when we...
You're listening to the closing moments of Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. We've been honoring Abby Lincoln. We unfortunately had to cut off Sonia Sanchez in the middle of her reading, To Whom Will She Cry Rape?, which was published in Tony K. Bambara's 1970 anthology, The Black Woman. By calling 516-620-3602, you can show your generous support of $35, and we will give you, as a thank you, the 2-CD set honoring Abby Lincoln, Aminata Moseka. And you can hear the entirety of Sonia Sanchez's reading of this piece, originally written by Abby Lincoln. Yeah, you didn't even know she got down like that, right? Yeah, well, there you have it. 516-620-3602, or you can go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. We're playing an excerpt of Long As You're Livin' from Abby Is Blue. That's a 1959 Riverside Records release. Before that, we heard Charlie Hayden's composition, first song, words written by Abby Lincoln. That's from Abby Lincoln's The World Is Falling Down, a 1990 Verve Records release. Stay tuned. La Nueva Alternativa is coming up next. 516-620-3602. Show your generous support of $35 and you can have this 2-CD set as a thank you. Or you can go to give2wbai.org. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl will be back on March 19th. Stay tuned.
Dying, hate for destroying. Never forget it, or you'll regret it, long as you're living. Forgive me if I seem to preach, but there was something that I had to say, a message that I hope will reach people who are throwing life away. I call it my philosophy. That is why I pass it on to you, because it works so well for me and helps me get away from strife. I hope you...
Hello. Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.